o'clock. As 2022 wraps up, it's time to look back at the year that was. Throughout the next couple of weeks, from time to time, maybe not always, but, you know, here and there, we'll be reflecting on the top political stories of the year. Now, some of them, of these big moments, happened right here on this show, whether it was hotly contested debates or hard-hitting interviews making news. Now, this is going to be a special edition of In the Middle. It's part of something we like to do every year. This is about the third year we've done it. So every year, In the Middle has been a thing, whether it was on radio, whether it was in podcast form. We have always done a special year-end In the Middle where we look back at the big moments, the top stories, all in the political world, and some of the stuff that even happened here on this show. It's really amazing what we try to do. We've had panels in the past of people talk about what their big moments of the year were, what their top stories, what they're looking at, and what are we looking at for next year. And that's essentially what we're doing here. On this week's edition of 2022, A Year in Review, we'll reflect on some of those big moments and what they could mean for next year. A big story this year was undeniably the overturning of Roe v. Wade. The Supreme Court struck down the landmark decision back in June. I'm sure you remember that. That was a big moment here on this show, too. It caused a lot of debate, including right here. We debated the subject right up to when the leak was happening. If you remember that back in May, the leak was what started the whole thing. That May 2nd leak by Politico of the draft decision, which ended up being pretty close to the final decision. Former Rutgers Democrats member Toby Amatoso and former Young Americans for Liberty State Chair Sarah Rossi went at it over the issue. When we first heard about that leak back in May, they were pounding the pavement, talking about it, debating it. Sarah was talking about the pro-life side of it, and Toby was defending the Roe v. Wade decision and how a lot of people, you know, claim, oh, this isn't in the Constitution, it's not a guaranteed right. But Toby made the argument of how there are certain amendments to the Constitution that were put together in order to guarantee interracial marriage. And he claims that wasn't in the Constitution, and it's the same principle. You know, enough of me talking. Why don't you just listen to it for yourself? Take a listen.
The first thing I will get at is the reasoning behind Roe and Casey. There are plenty of rights carved out in various Supreme Court cases that do not exist in the Constitution. I mean, the most obvious and flagrant recent example of this is the Heller decision that carved out a right to bear arms for the individual that was not written into the Constitution. And that was, through various cases, throughout the 1800s and the 1900s, ruled not to exist. It was a complete reversal of precedent because it was just carved out and created whole cloth. The right to privacy that Roe is based upon, from the Griswold case in 1955, uses the First, the Second, the Fourth, the Fifth, and I believe the Tenth Amendment to create the right to privacy. Because, yes, there's no right to privacy in the Constitution, but I think we all agree that it is part of the American tradition. And so to base that on, for legal church to base a right to privacy, to use right to privacy as a basis for abortion, I don't think that's insane. I don't think that's weak. I know that conservatives and even some liberals have retreated on this point. They are wrong. They're completely incorrect. There's plenty of rights that we carve out, like the right to interracial marriage or, you know, the right to protest in front of an abortion clinic, that are like not written clearly in the Constitution, but are carved out. That's the whole point of the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court is supposed to guarantee you things and protect your rights and explain and interpret what they mean. I mean, even when we were taught in high school and middle school about what the Supreme Court was for, we were told it was meant to interpret the law. Well, interpreting the law means carving out rights that aren't explicitly stated in the law, because there's plenty of situations that are going to make different rights go and bump up against each other, and they have to make sense of it. The second thing I will say is Roe did not cause division. People didn't start protesting Roe until like 2 or 3 years afterwards. Most people thought abortion was a thing, and it wasn't that crazy to do it. Same thing with contraception being guaranteed by Griswold. It was in the late 70s, and it was linked to different parts of like the pro-segregation school movement that people started talking about. People like Phyllis Schlafly started talking about protesting abortion. A lot of these guys just didn't care about it very much. I'm not saying that the pro-life movement is a completely disingenuous thing, because I can completely understand, based on genuine Catholic belief, why somebody would be uncomfortable with abortion. But I don't think that a lot of the people who are in this movement, who are making the laws, care about it. And I honestly think a lot of them are doing it just because they are either hopped up on the pissing off liberals juice that came from the Trump movement, or they don't like women. They don't like them.
I would disagree. I think they do like women. I think they want to protect women. I just feel like they are taking away what women can actually do, which is women can actually go through childbirth. Only women can give birth to a child. No one else. I believe they are just trying to protect women. They are trying to normalize this act. Because what is going on is that there is division. And I disagree with you. I think there has been more division. Take a look at all the riots. Take a look at all the rallies from the case from Roe v. Wade to now. A year ago, we saw women basically protesting, pro-choicers protesting by putting abortion pills in their mouth. You saw that, right? That caused major discrepancies between both the left and the right. And I also want to mention, did you also know that Norma McCorvey, like, she basically became a figure over something she never really underwent? She wanted to get an abortion, but she couldn't get one in Texas. But then she never really underwent that abortion. She didn't do it. And then, basically, now she's just staunchly pro-life.
She died like, a few years ago. And she actually had a death session where she... I don't know what to do with Norma McCorvey, because once somebody's changed their mind 3 times, I don't really know what to do with anything they say. But on their deathbed, in this documentary that she kind of put together, she said that she took a bunch of money from the pro-life movement and she regretted everything she did. And I don't think that that necessarily even invalidates your point, but I think it just means, like, what, it doesn't really matter what Norma McCorvey says, because she doesn't seem to be consistent in what she believes. And I think that the division argument anyway, I mean, yes, there's been protests now, because it's become a political...
No, there has always been protests for years.
There were protests in the 80s, and there were protests from then on. But there weren't protests for like 3 years until it was made a talking point, and it was politicized. I think that, honestly, division in the country because something is controversial doesn't mean it shouldn't be resolved. Most states didn't think people should marry each other from different races when that was on the table, and that caused controversy. You know how many people wanted to impeach Earl Warren because he said people deserve Miranda rights? Like, things like that do cause controversy. It doesn't necessarily, that's not the reason why something is wrong. I mean, like, even the Heller decision, which I do think people should have a right to bear arms in this country. Do you think that that was, like, an easy thing? Do you think that nobody disagreed about that? Obviously they did. That's what the Supreme Court's for. If the Supreme Court's only dealing with things that nobody really cares about, guess what? It's an elitist institution, and it's not doing anything. If there's a consensus about everything government's doing, then it's not doing its job.
Roe v. Wade wasn't the only long-held convention to end this year. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, Majority Leader Steny Hoyer, and Majority Whip Jim Clyburn all decided to step aside from leadership. Collectively, all three of them have been in the House leadership positions for decades. They were in House leadership, well, Pelosi herself was there for probably close to 20 years. So if you add them all up, it really is decades that all three of them have been there. So very monumental change. This comes after Democrats lost the House and have been clamoring for a new generation of leadership. That's practically a quote. You hear all these people talking about a new generation. It's time for a new generation. Essentially, they're trying to signal that younger people need to take the reins here. But also, you're starting to see more diverse leadership. That seems to also be what the Democratic Party is claiming for. Because let's look at these people. You got Hakeem Jeffries. He's a congressman from New York. He's currently the chair of the House Democratic Caucus. He is now going to take over the position of House Minority Leader come January. Then you got Caroline Clark, who's going to be the House Minority Whip. And then you have it rounding out with Pete Aguilar. He's going to be in the third highest ranking position. So that's basically how the team's going to be formed. They're going to be the top three Democrats in the House come January. So every one of them has a bit of a diverse. You have Hakeem Jeffries being the highest ranked black member that we've ever seen in the House. Then you have Caroline Clark, who's a woman, and you have Pete Aguilar, who's Hispanic. So this is essentially the Democratic Party trying to signal to their voters, we take diversity seriously and we're listening. And then with Hakeem Jeffries, also the youth thing as well, because he is in fact on the younger side compared to Pelosi, who is in her 80s, along with Steny Hoyer and Jim Clyburn. Now, a lot of these Democrats have been clamoring for this new leadership thing. They've been all talking about it for years. And one of them is New Jersey 11th District Democratic Congresswoman Mikey Sherrill, who said on this show that she wouldn't have voted for Nancy Pelosi as Speaker if her party maintained control of the House. Give it a listen. In the past, you have criticized leadership in your caucus, specifically Speaker Pelosi, and have gone as far as to say it should be time for fresh blood. You voted present last time when Pelosi ran for re-election as House Speaker. If your party maintains control of the House, would you support Nancy Pelosi for Speaker?
No. I said 4 years ago it was time for new leadership. Certainly 4 years later, I don't think that we should continue to have the same leadership in place that we've had for decades. We really do need to invest in new leaders.
So you would be a no on Pelosi, correct?
Certainly, yes.
In addition to Nancy Pelosi, some Democrats are running away from other leaders within their Democratic Party, including President Biden. Certain Democrats have gone on the record saying he shouldn't run in 2024, while others have evaded the question altogether. New Jersey 5th District Democratic Congressman Josh Gottheimer is one of the Democrats who aren't exactly praising President Biden right now. Now, I want you to listen closely to this because he answers the question in a way where it kind of seems like he's a patriotic guy, but then you got to remember he's a Democrat. And in a blue state like New Jersey, you usually want to be pro-Biden all the way. But I want you to listen specifically and see how much does he mention Biden in the answer compared to other Democrats who may be more familiar with who like Biden and they talk about his accomplishments all the time and think it's all great. Now, listen to this. Now, keep in mind, this was back when he was running for re-election. So, you know, he was probably trying to get some swing voters in there too. But if you are in the Democratic fold, you typically want to defend your man, especially when the midterms are usually seen as a referendum of the presidency, although Biden's approval ratings aren't too great. So some might speculate that could be a reason why we are seeing this movement within the Democratic Party. Listen to him as I ask about supporting President Biden. Now, I want to talk about the president at hand here. He's a guy who's seen lower approval ratings than many would like to see in your party, and some members of your party are not sure whether they're going to support him next election or whether they can support him now. Do you still consider yourself a Biden supporter?
So I believe you should support the president of the United States regardless of party, because it's your country, right? And what I'm focused on, like everyone, should be to do everything we can to put our country first and protect our country. Our if you lose sight of one thing for 1 hour as an elected official, it's a huge mistake. Our enemy, our countries, like the leadership of China, the leadership of Russia right now, not one another in the United States. We live in the greatest country in the world. And to me, what we should focus on is how we can come together as a country and make sure that we rebuild and fix what has deteriorated, the bonds that have deteriorated in our country, and focus on where we agree. You know, we agree 99% of the time on things, you know, but what gets covered in social media and on cable news are the 1% of screaming and yelling and disagreement versus where we come together all the time, as we did in the last year on all the legislation I just talked about, from veterans legislation to infrastructure legislation, of how we actually can sit down and find common ground. That, to me, is what we should focus on instead of getting into these skirmishes.
If the president offered to campaign for you, would you welcome him to do so?
So if anyone wants to come here and actually bring some more resources that we're fighting to claw back, I'll take anyone to come here. And as long as we're bringing success for Jersey, and and someone comes along with some more resource to fix our roads and bridges and tunnels, I'll welcome anybody.
Josh Gottheimer has touted his bipartisan credentials as co-chair of the Problem Solvers Caucus. Former New Jersey Republican Governor Christine Todd Whitman has also tried to generate more bipartisanship in Washington by backing centrist candidates this cycle on both sides of the aisle. So you might have heard about this effort, this moderate party thing. They're really trying to push hard on it. And she's worked with Miles Taylor, who's a former Chief of Staff of the Defense Department under the Trump administration, Olivia Troy, another former Trump administration official. She worked, I believe, for Mike Pence. These were people that were with them originally, but then they're like, this is a little too extreme. And then you also had Christine Todd Whitman working with them, basically trying to get this kind of centrist coalition together, this moderate party thing. And a lot of people are wondering whether this is a good thing or not, or whether how much can it really get off the ground here. And it was kind of interesting because this movement essentially landed right in Christine Todd Whitman's backyard in New Jersey's 7th Congressional District. A little drama there. The moderate party was trying to get double ballot positioning, meaning that the candidate can appear on more than one party banner, because in New York you can do that. Like, for example, a lot of Republicans in New York run as Republicans, but then they also run on the Conservative Party ticket. So essentially they're running on multiple party banners. But in this case, New Jersey does not have that kind of law in place. So Tom Alnowski, in order to try and get more votes and appear more moderate, he tried to get his name on the ballot twice, one as a Democrat and one in this moderate party thing, because they essentially, moderate party, nominated him as to be their guy in this district. Now, that's also interesting because, one, he lost, and two, because there's been questions about whether he was a moderate or not, because his voting record is very pro-Biden, and a lot of people don't see Biden as the most moderate Democrat right now compared to his past public life, where he was kind of a guy who was seen as more of a bridge builder and reached across the aisle and worked with people during his time in the Senate as vice president. He attempted to do that a lot, but now he is more sticking to his guns and more towards the progressive wing. So you have that in mind. Then also the fact that Christine Todd Whitman lives here. Okay, Christine Todd Whitman lives in the district. Now, she does spend some time elsewhere, but this is primarily where she is. Her home in Old Wick is located in this district. Now, you might say, okay, maybe she likes this Tom Alnowski guy. She did say that, you know, that there were two good choices here, but there is a political heavyweight in the Republican Party who ran and won, and that would be now Congressman-elect Tom Kaine. Now, Tom Kaine, interesting background there, is the son of the former governor, Tom Kaine Sr., who was a very popular Republican governor and also someone that Christine Todd Whitman has a lot of back history with and that she's had great admiration for in the past. And that extended to his son, Tom Kaine Jr. So with that in mind, it brings the question of who is she backing? Is she going to back the Democrat over her longtime friends? And if she doesn't, does that mean that she's essentially picking a Republican over a moderate Democrat? Does that go against the grain of the, okay, we need to get moderate Democrats and Republicans in there? Well, this was an interesting question that I had when I was talking to the former governor earlier this year. And when it came down to supporting now New Jersey 7th District Congressman-elect Tom Kaine, who I should mention is a moderate Republican, she declined to explicitly make her intentions public. In other words, she didn't even bother mentioning who she is supporting and voting for in this district. Take a listen to this. Now, you did mention that you are also looking to support Republicans. One of the most competitive races in the whole country lies right here in New Jersey, specifically where you live in the 7th Congressional District. Incumbent Democratic Congressman Tom Malinowski is running for re-election. Former State Senate Minority Leader Tom Kaine Jr. is currently the frontrunner. He's a moderate Republican and is the son of former Governor Tom Kaine, who also was known for reaching across the aisle. Is he someone who will have your support this year?
Well, that's certainly a race where there are two good choices, frankly, as far as there being centrists involved. And my particular preference is wherever we can, we support those Republicans who are centrists, who will stand up to leadership and be able to push back against what's happening.
So does Tom Kaine Jr. have your vote this year?
That's a private vote, but I've been very close to the Kaine family, and I have supported Tom Kaine Jr. Through all his election cycles.
New Jersey politics has brought us some surprises in recent years. No one knows that better than former State Senate President Steve Sweeney, who was ousted last year by Republican truck driver Ed Durr, which was kind of shocking to people because he didn't really have a lot of money on hand. And in past elections, people have thrown millions of dollars to try and get Steve Sweeney off of that Senate seat. They tried to knock him off his poach there, but they were not able to do that. And basically, a truck driver from Raymore and Flanagan with little political experience was just able to do it just like that, not even thinking about it. So after losing, Sweeney, and another surprise where you don't really hear many people who lost talk about this type of stuff, told a group of union workers that he plans to run for governor in 2025. And then the story gets even more interesting and involves our show. He flat out denied the story when he spoke to me back in January. So this was the first interview he did when leaving government. To give you a little background, this was literally, it was amazing that we had this opportunity, and I'm grateful that I got to do it. I was the first journalist, to my knowledge, to speak to former State Senate President Steve Sweeney when he left. So it was literally an hour later, once he handed the gavel over to Nick Scutari, he basically sayonara'd out of there and talked to me. So we touched upon this, obviously, and much more as he goes into this next phase of his political career that may be not so public right now, but could be later. Listen here. At the New Jersey State Association of Pipe Trades Convention in Atlantic City last month, you told a group of a dozen union leaders that you plan on running for governor in 2025. Can you confirm that you will run for governor?
I did not announce I was running for governor, Joey. What I said was, who knows, in 4 years, I might be running for governor. You know what I'm saying? Like, I could run for re-election to the Senate. What happened this year was it was shocking to say the least, but I could also run for governor. I mean, my future is very, very clear. I'm going to start a think tank with the university in New Jersey, and talks with a few of them, and we're going to start dealing. Look, by not being Senate president, and I'm telling you, I didn't want to leave, but by not being Senate president, I'm not stuck in a partisan role. I can work with both sides to come up with ideas that, again, it'll be change, it'll be different, but it'll be just as good, if not better, and more affordable. And that's my goal.
On the other side of the aisle, things are already a little more certain as to who will be running for governor in 2025. Jack Cittarelli has been quite explicit in his intentions to launch a third gubernatorial campaign. Here, he gives us a timeline for when he will announce a run. I know we're running low on time here, but I gotta ask you, you lost the gubernatorial race back in November. In your concession speech, you said you were going to run for governor again in 2025. When can we expect a formal announcement?
I'm focused this year on the congressional races, Joey. Next year, I'll be focused on the legislative races. And then you'll see an announcement from me sometime in early 2024. So, listen, we were in it to win it this time. I really thought we were going to. We know what we need to do better, and I plan to get out there and make it happen.
Well, that about wraps it up for me this week. Thank you so much for joining me. As always, we're going to try, as I said in the beginning of the show, we're going to try and continue to do this 2022 a year in review throughout the month. It might be in part of an episode, it may be a whole other episode, but we're definitely going to do more. And at some point this month, I'm going to reveal my top 10 political stories of the year. It may be national, international, maybe state, maybe even super local. You're going to have to keep listening to find out what they are. Now, you're probably saying, where do I find the show if I just found this for the first time and I want to actually find out where your top 10 are? Well, here's what you got to do. You got to go to your browser. You got to put in foxsportsradionewjersey.com/podcast. Again, that is foxsportsradionewjersey.com/podcast. You put that in the browser, and then it'll take you to the home screen of the podcast page. This link actually gets you right to the podcast page where all the podcasts are for Fox Sports New Jersey. You scroll down until you find In the Middle with Joey Block. You click on that, and all the episodes will be there. The newest one will be at the top, and the older ones will be at the bottom. Now, in case you are trying to get updates on the show, we typically put it out every Friday afternoon around 2 or 3 o'clock, but with the holidays, it may vary a little bit, so you know, you need some place to get your updates. Well, that's what you can do here. You can keep an eye on the show by following us on social media. In particular, you can follow me. So to do that, you can do it on Twitter at @Block_Joey. Again, my last name is spelled BLOCH_Joey. You can also check me out on Instagram at joey.block.39. Again, that is at joey.block.39. Well, thank you so much for joining me. As always, it has been a pleasure. We'll be back again next week with more In the Middle right here on Fox Sports New Jersey.